Emo. Emotional music for emotional people. E. M. O.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another week of Classically Emo, another episode, another week, whatever the fuck ever I normally say. I don't really know. I say happy Wednesday. It's a normal Wednesday in most aspects. Just so you guys know that, not that this has any effect to the rollout or change of schedule for these episodes, I'm about to record a shit ton of fucking episodes because I don't even know if I said this last week or not. But I found out last Tuesday that I was going to get laid off on a Friday, and that simply was not an April Fool's joke. I literally did get laid off on Friday. So I've got nothing but fucking time to record podcast episode after podcast episode and do fucking interview after interview for Substream. So that's all I'm going to do. And I will tell you this, something that I wish somebody would have told me, but not really, because that means somebody would be in this situation, right? There is literally nothing good. I don't know how many times I said literally already, but there is simply nothing good about getting laid off from your job, except for one singular thing. You can go grocery shopping at any fucking point in time during the week. Like, you can go on a fucking Monday morning, a Wednesday afternoon. You can go, if you want to brave it, at fucking 6:30, 7 in the morning, knock yourself out, because you know what? You don't have to go to work. Like, I was working 6:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m., right? So there was simply going to be no way in fucking hell that by the time I left that building at 6:30, I was going to haul my ass over to fucking Schnucks or Kroger from back in Ohio or Publix if I'm in Florida for some unforsaken reason. I don't know why the fuck I'd be in Florida. Or whatever the fuck people grocery shop out in California. I don't know. I about said Amazon like a fucking idiot. That's how you know I'm fucking out of my mind, because Amazon, whatever. I guess in theory, whatever. I'm not going down the fucking Amazon rabbit hole. You get the point, right? You can go grocery shopping whenever, and it's so much less stressful, so much less busy than going on like a Saturday afternoon or, God forbid, a Sunday afternoon. Like, holy fuck, it's the best thing in the world. Other than that, obviously being laid off is fucking horrible, and I wouldn't wish it on anybody, you know, so there's that. Anyway, back on topic with the podcast here, we're doing a great episode this week. If you're listening to this, you're probably staring at the fucking title of the episode. So this is the first time on this podcast, for somehow, I'm doing a Take It Back Sunday record, and we're doing Where You Want to Be. I'm having Mike from Pinamino and Hotel Etiquette come on, and we're going to talk about this record for about an hour, as always. I think I've known Mike for probably 8 years. I think he might talk about this on the podcast. 8, 9 years. I don't know. Time is really fake these days. And so, you know, it's one of those things that we did a episode on Pinamino a few weeks ago. Molly Huddleston and I did. And Mike and I kind of started talking and reconnecting a little bit after that. And decided that, you know what, it would be great to have him on the podcast, and we picked the record, and this was the one. So we dive into a lot of reasons why Mike and I picked Where You Want to Be, and I don't want to spoil it for you, but I will just say that it's a fucking great record, and that's really all. So I'll get this fucking stopped recording, because nobody else wants to hear me talk for the next 3.5 minutes. So as always, after this brief head, we're going to dive right into our record. And then, at the end of the episode, nothing happens, and we'll see you next week. Thank you so much for listening, and ciao for now. All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another week here of Classically Emo. I've got a great guest with me today. I think, Mike, you and I first met, oh my God, 8 years ago, 7 years ago, 9 years ago? I don't know. I think it's when you guys were on tour with the Swellers, I think. However, how long ago that
right.
was.
Right. It's been too long since we've had a chat, I feel like. So I really appreciate the chance to come on and do this with you.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. So I appreciate you coming on, and we're going to do a great Take It Back Sunday record, Where You Want to Be, which is the first time I thought about Taking Back Sunday record. And, you know, this, I think for me is, we'll dive into it a lot here in a second, but I think Where You Want to Be is, I know everybody looks at Tell All Your Friends as like the seminal Taking Back Sunday record, right? But I would almost raise that this is the seminal Taking Back Sunday record, I would think. Like, yeah. this is obviously, you know, right before they went and did the more just straight up rock sounding Louder Now, right? So this is kind of that in between of you get, it's basically a polished version of Tell All Your Friends, kind of.
Yeah, I can give it that for sure. This was very much a time and place record for me, which I'm sure like everybody's got an attachment to it. And it's part of the reason that it blew up the way that it did, because it just became the soundtrack to life for everybody through like multiple age groups or spanning lots of the different genres, especially at the time, emo booming the way that it was and punk music doing what it was doing. But at any rate, I got around to driving around in the summertime with the windows down by the time that record was a thing. So I have like a huge attachment to that, I guess. But it was weird because, you know, at the time when they were kind of coming up, I was busy listening to like The Unseen.
Yeah.
And like The Exploited and The Casualties and shit. Like it was very much this holier than thou street punk version of myself in like ninth grade. Well, I didn't understand this shit, and I just thought like, oh my god, this is such like whiny baby bullshit. Why would I bother? Like, yeah. I want to kill something. Yeah. Like, you know, this is not for me.
Yeah.
But then somebody changed my mind, man. I was like, you know, watching MTV. It's got to be like 3 a.m. And Decade Under the Influence video comes on. Mm-hmm. And the dude I was hanging with, his name is CJ. He's like the best guitar player maybe ever of all time, but nobody knows who he is. So shout out to that guy. But,
yeah, good job, CJ. Yeah.
He said, he just said, dude, I don't like this band, but I really like the mood of this song. And I'm like, what do you mean the mood? You know what I mean? And that like, I mean, and he doesn't, I don't know if we ever had a conversation about it, but that like statement alone changed my mind at like, you know, 15 or however old I was when it came out. Because it made me think like, oh, a song could have a mood then. Like you could say something maybe musically that you wouldn't be able to say otherwise with the lyrics, because I'm used to caring about punk bands where we're just like shouting the message and it's fast and it's aggressive and that's cool. But I didn't really get what the fuck the mood was, you know, or I didn't understand what that meant. And then, I mean, from that point on, dude, you know, that's been my life's mission, you know, to figure out what is the mood and how do I communicate that? So, this record changed everything for me, dude. It's something that I would put in my veins if I could, and that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I mean, I think this is that perfect record. And you mentioned kind of earlier that this is like, this was when that pop punk emo scene was booming, right? And this obviously came out on Victory Records, and I think nobody benefited from that time more than Victory Records, right? They had Taking Back Sunday, Hawthorne Heights. I mean, they were. Them and Drive Thru really were just cash and checks for like days for the 4, 5, 6 year run, right?
Yeah, you're nailing it. I mean, it, in my mind, and I'm sure you could look at the numbers, but Hawthorne Heights was like an arena band at the time.
Yeah.
You know, they were really doing it. They were doing like Fall Out Boy numbers. And, that was really interesting, you know, because I was just still so snotty about the whole thing and I couldn't stand it. And I would see it come across like Fuse or MTV or like whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And I would just have so much to say, dude, so much, you know what I mean? That like didn't make any fucking sense. I had no idea that these guys were just getting in the van and doing the thing just like everybody else that I gave a shit about at the time. And, it took me a little while. It took me some time being in a band to like actually see that as a kid, you know. And I'm just lucky, dude. I'm lucky that there were people who were persistent enough in my life to be like, nah, dude, this is good and you are dumb.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Exactly. You know, and again, like like we already mentioned, it changed everything, obviously in the best way.
Yeah.
If I could thank him over and over, I would, but it's just, that record was like crazy part of everybody's life. Mm-hmm. And I'm lucky. I'm just lucky that mine turned out like it did because of that shit, you know, because wholeheartedly, like without that record, I don't know if I would have thought about music the same way. It might've been another band, but who knows if it would have worked out, you know? So.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they obviously, you know, it's easy to, it's fair to say they obviously directly influenced kind of like you guys, you and Pennemeto, like, right. So I think that it was always kind of shown through. And I think it's, you know, and what you mentioned earlier about Hawthorne Heights being like an arena band, they had like even a big single behind them, right? Like up till this point for Taking Back Sunday, were like Decade Influence kind of did like, okay. I think he had like, not even the top 10 of like alternative radio, but like Hawthorne Heights, and like, you know, Newfound Glory, bands like that, Yellow Card had a big radio song, and Taking Back Sunday didn't.
Dude.
And they were just, yes, like you said, they got to where they got because they just toured out the ass. I mean,
they toured out the ass, but they wrote music that people gave a shit about. It came along at a perfect time because there was like a great landscape for that type of music. Mm-hmm. To be made, you know, and everybody was like getting record deals and touring like crazy, and Warped Tour is like at its peak and everything. So like more power to them for being wrapped up in that whole scene, but they knew what they were doing, you know. They're songwriters at the end of the day, and they were just trying really hard to do that. They were writing shit that people were immediately tattooing on their bodies, dude. It didn't matter if they had a fucking single. It didn't matter if MTV had them in the rotation or radio had them in the rotation or even how many records they were selling. Mm-hmm. And that at the end of the day is the biggest accomplishment to make. You forget, especially like being a guy who cares about music a lot and you're in this world, or being a guy in a band. It's just not every band has to be the biggest band on the planet. You know, I think the Descendants are probably the first to say that.
Yeah.
So, not every band has to be the biggest band on the planet. And Taking Back Sunday's approach to that whole thing is just like, dude, we're hanging out 20 years later doing the damn thing.
Yeah,
nobody's gonna take that away from them. You know, and they are just a staple. And they get to be on the Mount Rushmore, like no matter how many records they ever sold or how many videos ever hit. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy to think about what life would be like without them, you know, or especially that record.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because for Taking Back Sunday, like they had to go through it in the sense that they survived member changes, right? I mean, and that's always hard to do, but especially for a band that had all of that momentum, right? I mean, they were riding the wave of Tell All Your Friends, which, like we said, didn't have a big single, but it was getting more and more popular as they were touring more. And I mean, I know they thought about breaking up when Sean and John left, which is also just wild to think what the hell would have happened to us if they did, you know. But that's hard for people. That's hard for bands to survive, right? Especially so early on, such a big change like that, you know, where obviously their big attraction, or not their big attraction, but one of the main things about them was their dual vocals. And then all of a sudden, your other songwriter and singer bolts because you guys can't stop arguing. So now you've got to replace the songwriter.
Yep.
And that's tough, man.
I'm sure somebody knows the origin story. I'm sure that there's a YouTube video about it somewhere, but Fred joining the band, like, and I'm sure he would love to hear it too, but him joining the band was the best thing to happen for the band itself. And at the time, because without question, the two records that he ended up being a part of, they were catapulted to different heights, right? Like they had video game songs. They were getting video game money. So
they were
in like Madden or something.
Hell yeah, they did.
And that's amazing. So that's cool, dude. Like you wrote a riff that ended up being that big of a deal. Like that rocks. At the end of it all, I can't believe that they did what they did with Nolan and then Fred and then eventually coming back to Nolan is really, really cool. But in between, they had Matt Fozzi.
Great guy.
Amazing great musician. Absolutely incredible. A great big pile of leaves is like the coolest band of all time. I I had a blast like getting to play with his bands over the years, doing Pentimento stuff. So for him to be a part of Taking Back Sunday also was really cool. His performance with them, they have a live session in like a cathedral somewhere.
Orsonans, live from Orsonans, right? That's yeah. fucking great.
You
so
got
good.
It. You got it. It's a crazy thing to behold, right? Like when you watch that performance, it's something else. It's yeah. They're just in a flow, dude. Tapped into something mm-hmm. totally fucking different that happens like once in a lifetime if you're lucky or something. I don't care yeah. if like there was tons of post-production editing to that whole mix mm-hmm. or what. I don't give a fuck what they did.
Sounds great.
Sounds great. And that was another great key moment where I was like, dude, hold the phone. Like your songs sound nothing like this, but you have this performance in this particular venue with these particular musicians and people. So you're going to totally rearrange this shit and totally like, oh, okay. You can just have fun all over again with your own shit. I totally forgot about that. I had no idea that that was okay. So like, dude, let's just put a bow on it right now and say that the contribution that they made to music entirely, the biggest thing that they ever did, not just for me, but for the fucking world, was make it okay. They made it okay, dude.
Yeah.
It's okay for you to feel that desperate about your breakup and talk about your throat getting slit, dude. You made it cool. You made it cool. And no matter how many people talk shit or made fun of it, and I was certainly part of that crowd at the time in those early days, no matter what, you made it okay. Thanks for making it okay. So then you went ahead and you put out Where You Want to Be and once again made it okay to actually like write songs that were rock songs at the end of the day, but they have this meaning to them that is untouchable because the performance on the record is not perfect. There's tons of like cracks and pops and like little weirdo sounds and stuff that is just an organic performance. It's somebody who Adam was in the fucking booth and the people that were listening to the takes, they were like, yo, dude, I don't care what you think of that one. That is the joint that is going on the record. Like, dude, invaluable contribution to music in that way, making it okay for you to take those risks. I'm going to put out this record. It's going to go gold at some point, but I'm going to be basically crying on the fucking thing. Like, dude, you're not doing that again. Nobody is doing that again. So I know we keep going back to the fact that like they didn't have a giant single or whatever, or maybe not until Louder Now did they get that sort of single recognition. But at any rate, they didn't need it. No. Yeah. And that's another thing that they made okay. You know what I mean? They just made it okay. And that's something that I'll never take for granted, because when I think about writing music now, or even trying to take myself seriously as a songwriter, if I'm not thinking about the things that those bands or those records did, then I'm a fucking idiot. Because the truth, I say this all the time, dude, but nobody living at this point in time has an excuse to make a record that sucks, because you already heard Where You Want to Be. You already heard that. So either you thought to yourself, I should try to do better than that, or you had that influence you in a particular way, or whatever the fuck it was. This already happened. You have no choice but to make something sick. You have no fucking choice. You know, so that's just what it is. And again, I'll always give that credit to Taking Back Sunday for or that record, Where You Want to Be, for making that okay for me, for my band, for my friends, for all the shit that I was into, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. They did. I mean, they, like I mentioned earlier, that it is just kind of like tell all your friends, like a better sounding, tell all your friends, right? I mean, this one, you know, I know they had, I think they worked with Lou Giordano on this one, which is interesting because I know I was reading that they self-financed the recording process. And I don't really know what the reasoning was why. I'd love to know why. But I know they wanted to go for Eric Valentine, who I think they then worked with on Ladder Now. Because they love, I mean, he did Third Eye Blind's first record. He did a Queen of the Stone Age record. But they ended up not using him for this. So I think it's just one of those things where they didn't change too much. Like you just mentioned, they didn't change kind of how they approached songs, right? Like they just refined them just enough to be like, it's different, but yet it was not going to alienate anybody. Right.
I mean, well, it was like the addition of Fred, and they probably had a conversation with him. I mean, I'm just imagining being like a fly on the wall, but
yeah,
you know, he's like, okay, I get it. Like, you go, okay, it's like an emo band. Cool. You want to do dual vocals? Like, I can do that. Like, I think I can write this riff, but the him and the bass player also having this crazy musical background, being like decorated collegiate level.
Yeah,
you know, professional musicians, you know, and walking into a punk band where it's just like, hey, this dude's been hanging out for a while. This dude's fucking drunk. What do you want to do? Like, and that rocks. Like to take the reins like that, but also serve the taste of not only the fans, but obviously the other dudes had to love it too. You know, so and those songs are just nothing to fuck with. So
yeah, that's right. My favorite tidbit that I was, you know, that I was reading about is that Matt didn't want to join the band originally because he didn't like emo music.
Yeah,
so
then
they were just like, they're probably like, listen, dude, you can make a ton of money. Like, this record's gonna be fucked. I don't want to say that he was doing it for money. I don't want to say that about him, but like something persuaded him to be like, okay, like this can be fun.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. And his additions, I think you mentioned him and Fred. The additions they made were just enough, and they kind of formed themselves that Taking Back Sunday mold. But
well, it fucking worked, man. I'm curious too, because I know that they had had some arrangements done or something by Mike Sapone, which is like, dude, I'll be honest, his records sound bad, but I mean. But him as a producer, it's something else. Like, he's obviously got something, because when I think about all the bands that have come out of his studio and put out records, they're all records that made me shit myself, you know, like thinking about like bands like Crime and Stereo or something like that, where like, okay, yeah, maybe it never got super successful, but it fucked me up.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter. It's like the Motown sort of approach. It's like, if the record's good, if the song is good, if the songs are good, then that's all we need. It doesn't matter what it sounds like. Yeah. And I love that. That's punk as fuck. So it's like, for as much as I want to be like, I don't know, I can hear a lot of like background hiss on the Mike Sapone. Like, dude, fuck me. Who cares?
Yeah.
Those songs are insane, and they captured something that is just like, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter like what kind of frequencies got left in or whatever. Who cares? You know, again, those songs are just, they're meant for people to carve into their skin, dude. It's something special, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, I wanted to talk about, you know, kind of a few songs specifically on this record, because I think there's a lot of songs on this record that became like my favorite Taking Back Sunday songs, you know. And I know you mentioned A Decade Under the Influence earlier, because that was the one that kind of got you into them and opened it up to like, okay, fine, I'll fucking listen to this band, right?
Yeah.
And I think, I know that was the first single they released, I think in June, and the record came out in July. Yeah. But that was probably the perfect like first single, because I think that is like stylistically like the most like tell all your friends sounding song, right? And I think that was a great introduction of obviously Fred, and then how like, hey, listen, this is the guy that we replaced John with. They're two different sounding people, but yet they're going to do the exact same thing. Here's what we've got. And they did. And I think I mentioned that was like their biggest radio song up till that point. But I just think that was I don't know who the fuck decided this was going to be the first single, but yeah, I think probably somebody at Victory who doesn't work there anymore, but like kudos to whoever decided that.
Dude, who knows? Because that it doesn't matter, does it? It doesn't matter because that song just fucking happened to people, dude. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just another song that you were just like, oh yeah, that's really cool. It wasn't, it just not that. I'm sorry, dude. Yeah. I don't give a fuck. It doesn't matter if you're fucking Story of the Year or Lost Prophets or whoever the fuck at the time. Mm-hmm. Fuck, get out of the way. This dude, it's something else. It's something else. Mm-hmm. And it's for the people that get it. Mm-hmm. It's, you know what I mean? Maybe it isn't for the radio. It doesn't have to matter to everybody, but the people that it does matter to, holy shit. Holy fucking shit. So that I mean the power in that alone is crazy. Yeah. And that's worth a podcast on its face for sure. Alone.
Oh yeah.
But dude, dive into the record because this is a crazy masterpiece of music.
Yeah.
And I would love to nerd out a little bit.
Yeah, let's do it, man. I think that's, you know, that's a great point. Like, I love that you just mentioned Story of the Year. One, because I'm in St. Louis right now, and hello, they're from here. Two,
dude, and shout out to them. Shout out to them because they're great. They took such great care of us when we played there on a Reggie the Full Effect tour back in the day. Singer was a total sweetheart. He gave us the whole fucking rundown about their band and just, you know, he was such a nice guy. And basically all he had to say was like, yo, keep going, you know, which was sick. So shout out to him too, man. Cool dude.
They're great. I mean, I've met them a few times. They're all great guys. But I think that's such a good point because, like we mentioned earlier, we mentioned Hawthorne Heights had a bigger song, Yellow Card, blah blah blah. But Story of the Year had two big radio singles, right, up to this point.
And then you had
fucking huge, like huge radio hits, but yet Taking Back Sunday was objectively the bigger band by the time Where You Want to Be came out, right? Like,
and dude, so like because it was just that cult thing, and they were lucky to develop it in the Tell All Your Friends era for sure, because that's when we were all putting the shit in our away messages and whatever. It was nice. It was nice to have that crowd of people because that was a lot. That was a lot. Mm-hmm. But dude, it was over by the summer. MySpace was a thing. Shut the fuck up. I don't care. It doesn't matter. Like, again, dude, like and no disrespect to any of those bands. Okay.
Yeah.
It's just, dude, shut the fuck up. Who cares? Because this is happening.
Yep.
And this is actually the reason that you guys are on the radio. The reason that you guys are on the radio is because you said, oh, I know how to actually take a song that has like an emotional tinge to it. I know how to take some lyrics that sound like they really mean something to somebody, but I'll arrange it in a way that has a verse, chorus, good cop, bad cop thing going on. You get the high, they have some producer behind it who knows what the fuck he's doing too. And it's like, cool. I just took the best parts of a band like Taking Back Sunday and chopped it up so that it made better sense for me to make $1 million. And it's like, cool, dude. But you learned how to do that from those motherfuckers. And you know, again, no disrespect to anybody who
has
done it because of them, because I love it. Like they're all great and they're all great people.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be honest.
Who did it?
you know what I mean? And dude, I could say the same fucking thing about my own band, you know? So it's just like, I don't mean that in a bad way at all. It's just no one's touching that, dude. You're just not gonna do it. So don't just stop, just let it go. You know? But
yeah, man, absolutely.
Yeah, man, that's all.
I wanted, you know, you mentioned driving the record, let's do it, because I think one of my songs that I never thought I'd hear live was obviously This Photograph Is Proof, right? Because by the time I started going to concerts, they had fucking left the fucking band. And I think like my first concert was like 08-09, right? So by that time, you had brought in, you know, everybody else after that, and they were getting ready to do new again. And so I don't know if they ever had played This Photograph Is Proof live from the time like Fred left up until their 20th anniversary tour. But like, I don't know if they were going to do it outside of that, because obviously like that is like, I mean, he sings the chorus of that song, right? So like, it's just, and this is one of those songs that is top five Taking Back Sunday songs for me, because it's so fucking good. It is just, I don't know what the fuck they did when they did it. I don't know, like you mentioned, I don't know how the fuck they did what they did with this record and how they made it this way. because they only made it like a month. They fucking recorded the whole thing in a month somehow, and it was perfect. And this is the Taking Back Sunday song.
Dude, it's never bad enough to just leave or give up, but it's never good enough to feel right. Did that actually come out of a fucking person, dude?
Yeah, like, dude.
What? How did you just say it? How did you just say it? How did you just say it like that? How did you just sum it all up for everyone forever? Like, there is no Shakespeare fucking John Lennon motherfucker out there. You can't. You just can't. Like, and it's sad because it will never be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It will never be regarded in the Rolling Stone as something that really changed music. But, dude, the right people fucking heard that shit. And they were like, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Brilliant. Oh my God.
It is a true stroke of genius. And I mean, that song alone is a great example of what that band is capable of. I wish I knew more about who did what, you know, and who was really a part of it. But again, you know, it doesn't matter. I will say this.
I don't give a shit. Yeah.
around that time, when that record came out, I think I was downloading stuff on like, you know, and I had come across a lot of their demos for the record somehow, and I'm sure you've come across those on your YouTube travels too, but
and consistently. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so they're out there, but the demos for that record are also crazy. And you know what's amazing, dude? They didn't really change that much by the time they got to the studio and ended up doing the damn thing with a producer and blah 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 blah. The demos are still sick, dude, which is something that like Brand New can't say that. Brand New definitely can't say that. And they also recorded with Mike Sapone and did the whole Long Island thing and blah, 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 blah. Like, dude, you know, and shout out to Brand New. They're awesome. Like, great. Okay, cool. They did it. They wrote great songs that a lot of people care about too, but totally different experience because they had to like get in the studio and figure out how to be spooky and do that whole thing. And like, dude, Taking Back Sunday just... They just knew. They were like, yo, I know what I'm doing. And Adam is a guy that like gets in the booth, man, and just like feels stuff.
Yeah.
He just feels stuff.
Just feels things, man. It comes through. Yeah. He writes it and then he sings it. And it's just, I don't know how the fuck they just like, I mean, Tell All Your Friends Again is a great record, but I don't know how you, it blows my mind again. Like I mentioned, that you could just lose two, you know, fifths of your band and bring people in and still just make a better fucking record. Like
it's about gold. Being tapped
just
into
fucking
something.
Struck gold.
You know, it's about being tapped into something. It's just something for real. Whatever was going on for those guys at that point, it just had to happen.
Yeah,
it just had to happen that way. And it's really cool to be a guy in a band at all and think about that record, because I feel like there are moments that I can pinpoint in my life where it's like, God damn, I've just been trying to write this song forever. I have just been trying to write my own Decade Under the Influence forever. You know, and not in the way where like, oh, I'm going to rip that melody or I'm going to rip that chord progression or not like that. Just like, how did you do that, dude?
Yeah.
And how do I get there? How do I actually say what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
If anything, man, like my whole thing about this record is simply this. It gave everybody a lot of latitude to make some fucking rock and roll that had a little bit of heart behind it, and it wasn't this manufactured thing where they picked these perfect cookie cutter words that rhymed and whatever. They just really did something with their time, man. They really did something with the songs they made, and it's crazy to listen to that like 3 minutes of music or 3 minutes and 30 seconds of music for the single or whatever song and think like, dude, that's actually years. That's actually years of experience. That's actually like years of shit that has happened to you that I get to digest in this little amount of time. And I'm thinking, oh my God, this totally applies to me. He's talking about me, dude. Yeah. Fuck.
Yeah.
No. No, mm-hmm. it's something else. And it's a crazy thing to actually have a record of it. It's on record that at some point these motherfuckers were all hanging out, and this is what it sounds like. This is what it sounds like when they hang out.
Yeah.
That's crazy shit, dude.
It's insane, man. It's insane. And you know, I know they did this Photographs of Poop as the second single, and obviously it didn't, like, whatever, didn't hit the radio stand. But again, like, they weren't radio songs, and they didn't have to be. First of all, they ended up getting Tom DeLonge to direct the music video, which is always hilarious. Like, I know that was his first music video, and I know for them, like, they were in the middle of promoting this fucking record, right? So I know I looked it up, and like over a 48-hour fucking period, these crazy ass dudes went from Dallas to LA to Nashville to film the fucking video. Like, just fucking bonkers. Like, just committed to the
cost. You probably have to.
Yeah, how do you say no, man? Yeah, I mean, this is 2005, so this was probably, I don't know, depending on when, 2005 either, right? Well, fuck, Blink broke up in February, so it's probably after. So after Blink broke up, like, well, you can't tell him no. You don't, who the fuck cares? I mean, you gotta do it. So they were just committed to the fucking cause, man. Committed to getting this shit right, and
they did.
And I don't know. I could really go track by track with you on this record and be like, this song, this song, this song.
Oh yeah, 100%. But we don't even have to do that. Let's just talk about how, like, Taking Back Sunday made it okay for all of you assholes to to name your songs something clever, some bullshit sentence that has nothing to do with it.
Yep.
Like, Fall Out Boy, you can say thank you too. Like,
yep.
Yeah, all of you.
Yeah.
All of us. I should say all of us.
All of us, folks. But yeah.
You know what I mean. Like, dude, whatever your beef was with them at the time that they started to bud as a band and show everybody, like, hey, yeah, like, we're wearing tight jeans and we're going to swing the mic around and we're talking about girls crashing their cars and whatever the mm-hmm. fuck. Dude, they just made it okay for an entire generation and then some of people to do the right thing. To start writing songs that came from somewhere else, not just like, oh, this rhymes with this, or this is what this band does. It made people think. And if nothing else, you know, this record is just a perfect representation of what it means to make a record that is, I mean, it will kick your ass at the end of the day. It's a rock and roll record.
Yeah. But
it means something.
Mm-hmm.
And it means something to a lot of people because Adam is smart and writes lyrics that it means something to him, but it's left up to interpretation for the people out there. And that's special too. There's a lot of Fred on that record that, like, comes through just to show what a songwriter he is and what he's capable of when he gets with another person who knows music and music theory and can speak the language the way that he does. You know, getting with the bass player and having that whole background of their degrees in music and stuff. I mean, that's a really, really cool thing. I don't know of a lot of bands that can really say that, but how lucky, like you said, you know, for the guys to lose their main songwriter and then get this other duo in the band that's just so serious. It's
fucking good, yeah.
Yeah, and it adds so much. In a weird way, the bass is my favorite part of Where You Want to Be. That guy's musical decision making is crazy, and it's like tasteful, but it sticks with me. And you know, I couldn't say enough about the record for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, you mentioned the fucking in the funny song titles. I mean, Slow Dance on the Inside was something about they were stuck inside. It was I mean, just some random fucking shit. I mean, 180 by Summer. I think there was some bet that Eddie would he would weigh 180 pounds by summer that he fucking lost the bet. So they named the song. I mean, just such random shit that has absolutely literally nothing to do with the songs, right? And you just, nobody gives a fuck because they're so fucking so solid. And you know, something that I wanted to mention, speaking of Slow Dance on the Inside, because you mentioned like his kind of clever wordplay without like forcing like a rhyme, right? That song has the "so careless I could care less," right? And you're like, okay, like, again, who the fuck, like, where did this come from, dude? Stop. Like, you're putting the rest of us to shame. Like,
just stop.
Just leave so some, fucking good.
Leave for some. The rest of us. There is none left, dude. Like, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
dude, it's like an amazing thing to try to describe for you what it's like to be a songwriter, or someone who thinks they're a fucking songwriter, I should say, and tries to dig in to a situation, a feeling, a moment, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And having all of that stuff in your like your musical like your genetic makeup musically, right? Like your DNA as a musician comes from somewhere. It's all your influences over time. And I feel so fucking lucky that I had a band like Taking Back Sunday come along at the time where I was just getting into shit, like staying out all night and breaking up with chicks and having my heart broken too. And like, dude,
yeah.
because they made me think about it. Mm-hmm. And without that, you know, who the fuck knows?
Yeah.
And not to say like, if you didn't listen to Taking Back Sunday, that you would have no perspective in your life. It's just,
yeah.
I tried to do something specifically because Taking Back Sunday showed me the way. They showed me this way to connect to music, what you feel all the time, what you try to describe for other people when you're in a situation, when you have a problem, when you have a feeling. And, taking it back to what I was talking about earlier about the mood, they are masters of pulling you like into their world with what they're doing musically and lyrically. It's a crazy thing to think about as a songwriter, because when you're shown those examples as a young person, you don't quite know what it means yet.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't find out until much later that, like I keep harping on, dude, somebody made it okay for you. So maybe you write something that hits. Maybe a lot of people are really stoked on something that you had to say. Maybe you have a moment where you're like, oh my God, I actually feel fucking proud of myself.
Yeah.
Like this is something I was really trying to say that. Oh my God, I really got close that time to really getting at what I was, you know, feeling and whatever. But somebody showed you the door that you had to walk through to get there entirely. So to have those moments where you're like really psyched on yourself and your own songwriting and whatever, like that's amazing. But when you zoom out a little bit and just kind of realize for a second, like, man, somebody showed me how to do that. Somebody showed me that it was okay to feel first.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And like that's just, you know, them and of course like Dashboard Confessional and those types of bands at the time, man, like they were just doing something else. I don't even know how to say it.
Yeah.
And
Dashboard, man, it's a great call. It was riding the fucking wave, dude. Like just getting everything out there and just, I mean, everyone says the heart on the sleeve thing, but like, I mean, it's just, I don't know two better bands that you could actually say that about, right?
Yeah,
other than like Dashboard, obviously Dashboard and this band, Take You Back Sunday.
Here's the secret. The secret is there's one rule, dude, when you make music, there's one. And you could talk all day about the craft of songwriting. You could talk all day about how your song needs to have three choruses and it needs to be 120 beats per minute and has to be da, 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 da. You could do that all fucking day, but the truth is it just has to not be corny, dude. It has to not suck. So even if you're the guy that's talking about getting your throat slit and bleeding on somebody's shirt and how like that whole experience is actually that fucking intense for you, if you can figure out a way to say that and not sound like a total fucking moron, then you did it. Because the truth is, the reason that stuff sounds corny and it sucks is because, like, oh yeah, we all feel like that. So we all want to say how we all feel all the time. But when somebody wraps it up for you in that kind of package, it's a really special thing. And that's the truth. The truth is just the only secret to this whole shit, no matter what kind of music you make, is you cannot be corny, dude. So when you're Dashboard Confessional, and you could hate on all of these bands for the same reason that you could love them, right? Like, it's whiny, it's sad, it's stuff that makes you want to drive your fucking car off a bridge. But they said it in a way that really connected to the world, dude.
Yeah.
And it's just something that you'll never be able to take away from them. And this record especially is an example of exactly what it takes to do that. It set the bar. It set the fucking bar.
It did.
For every band that wants to make sad boy shit. Okay. You have to listen to this and say to yourself, do I deserve to put out a record if it's not going to fucking contend with this garbage? Because you don't, dude.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but you don't.
Yeah.
You know, and keep trying for sure. Like, keep putting them out and keep doing the thing. Like, I love to see it. Every band should do their shit. There's space in the world for everybody, but
yeah,
man.
But sorry. The bar is fucking high, man. The bar is, I mean, you're right. They created the fucking bar with this. Yeah. And obviously, you know, like we mentioned, there were bands before them that were kind of kicking around. And, but again, we're not, you know, no disrespect to those bands, but this just took it to a whole new fucking level. For every, I think to this day, this is still not, it's the only, like, not that this is only the measure of success, but I think to this day, this is probably still like the best selling Victory Records, like, record, you know? And so for every band,
because it's crazy, because at that time there was like an email, I'm sure you could find it online now, but there was like a crazy email circulating where like Tony Victory is conspiring with other members of Victory Records on how to fuck Taking Back Sunday out of for money, and like that's like a whole story, you know. And they dealt with that like very publicly because people had to see that shit. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah,
like just the amount of shit that has been tossed at that band.
Yeah,
and dude, and every time they play Buffalo, New York, it's you would think they're fucking Aerosmith.
Yeah,
and it's awesome. You know what I mean? And
they're fucking great,
that,
dude.
I want that for them everywhere, forever. You know, just because they care about rock and roll, man. And I don't think that there's a band out there that doesn't have Taking Back Sunday to thank for their contribution to shit, whether you know it or not. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree, man. I mean, this what they did for this type of music, and you know, it can't be said enough. And I think you mentioned all the shit they've gone through. Obviously, we mentioned the member change before this, but then after this, and then again, when you bring John and Sean back into the band and you're on Warner Brothers, and I know they've talked about this previously, where Warner Brothers wanted them to do like, hey, why don't you guys re-record Tell All Your Friends for the 10th anniversary? And they're like, bro, no, absolutely fuck
Are
not.
You high? Yeah,
like, we're not going to do
that. Why would
I
do that?
Absolutely
and,
not.
And dude, what you're saying is great, because Adam is a person who in interviews and things like that has always like very gracefully handled like, hey, man, like, I wrote those songs and I was a kid.
He was like 18 or 19. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, I wouldn't say that shit now.
Yeah.
But I'll play those songs because people still fucking love them. Yep. And that's, dude, it, like,
that's the gracious way. I mean, exactly. Obviously they don't write these type of songs now. And I wouldn't want them to be in the studio like, that's fucking right where you want to be, part two. Because like you mentioned, one, it would sound corny as fuck. Right. And it would sound disingenuous. And I honestly don't think it would be that good, because why the fuck would I want them to be 38 years old trying
to sing?
That's the
only rule. Exactly. Because it would be corny. Because even if it sounded sick, there'd be this weird devil on your shoulder that was like, yo, they're like,
bro, they're 38.
That's not chill. And, you know, I think about that a lot, because, like, dude, my favorite band of all time is AFI. Mm-hmm. Okay. But, like, let's face it. All right. So all that aside, I would love for them to make another Art of Drowning or like Sing the Sorrow, but that's not going to happen. And that's great, dude, because they're not those fucking people, and they're leaving it to the people who do want to do that.
Yeah.
So awesome. You're not just beating a dead horse and putting out the same record over and over, you know, like, which is great. Some bands make a living doing that, and that's it.
Yeah.
But most of them are hardcore bands and nobody cares anyway. So fuck.
Yeah.
Like, at the end of the day, dude, Taking Back Sunday is still going to write music that means something to people. And guys like you and I, who gave a shit about them when we were kids, are going to listen to their newer records just because we're curious. I want to see where those guys are at. And you might catch something that you like, because whether we like it or not, we are growing right along with them.
Yeah, we are not. As much as I like, they're 38. I'm like, dude, I'm also like 15 years older.
I'm looking at this Wikipedia shit right now about the professional ratings of where you want to be.
Oh, I had that to talk about too. Yeah, that's funny.
What the fuck?
Bro, I had that literally. I mean, people aren't going to see this, but like, you can see it. I literally have
critical response and legacy, I'm like, a lot of people were critical of it because I wanted to be like, these people were fucking stupid.
Damn, dude. Well, shit. If you got other stuff on your list, you want to get?
No, absolutely. You walked. I mean, you brought that up, so I was curious where you were going to walk with that because I have probably the same.
Oh, that's
things.
It. I mean, dude, I'm looking at this and until this moment, I didn't realize that it was like reviewed this way or thought of as such a shitty record. I mean, it's got 4 out of 10, D+, 2 out of 5, 3 out of 5 stars from Rolling Stone. What the fuck is going on with you guys?
Yeah.
No,
it's because
nobody,
I mean,
but dude, nobody in that world was ready for it.
So no, absolutely not.
This is like a beautiful thing to realize in real time with you on this podcast that it didn't fucking matter at all what any of these websites thought because fuck you. And even, dude, again, like even if it's all about record sales and shit at the end of the day, like, okay, cool. Give me all of your top songwriter producer motherfuckers from Nashville and LA and have them write a better record than where you want to be. Just show me. Just
do
like,
it.
I will shut the fuck up forever. I will shut the fuck up forever. I'll shut up. Just show me. Just show me. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I know this doesn't fucking record sales don't matter, but this still sold like 170 or 160,000 fucking copies this first week.
Yeah, baby.
So all those professional
first week
reviewers, and obviously they were like rolling for Rolling Stone, you're a professional reviewer, but like this record wasn't, like we mentioned before, it wasn't supposed to be like a radio record. It wasn't supposed to be this and that. So they weren't going to fucking like it. And I would wager, I don't know, Louder Now might be like better received probably because it's more like that's just a fucking here of a record.
I would have to look at that Wikipedia too. But
yeah,
as far as that goes, dude, I am also learning this just in. Okay.
Breaking news.
Breaking news at this hour.
Yeah.
It debuted at number 3.
Yeah, fucking huge record.
Why are we doing this?
Fucking huge.
Who cares? Why are we even having this conversation? No one has to prove anything at all about this shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Nobody.
Yeah.
So anyway, dude. Yeah. This whole rating system is obviously fucked. But who cares?
Who cares, man? Our opinions, they're out the fucking door. They have, like you mentioned, they've made a fucking living off this shit, man. They, you know, and you could say they don't sell, but nobody sells fucking records like 2004 anymore. Not a single person does. The only people that sell records like it's 2004 is fucking Drake and apparently Morgan Wallen for 2 months. But like nobody fucking does it. Like, you know,
dude,
so
shout out Drake too, because he's sick.
He's fucking great, dude. So like the fact that they are still out there, still just did that massive fucking 20th anniversary tour and, you know, are going to put out a new record probably soon, hopefully, you know, and I think, you know, like you mentioned, you know, we're going to check it out because we're going to see what it is. And the last record was Tidal Wave, which, I mean, to be very honest, there are probably 3 songs on that record that I like really fucked with, you know, and that's all we need, man. I mean, you know, they're going to go out, write a fucking great record that they love. I'm going to listen to it multiple times. I'm like, all right, I'm going to pick the songs I either I love most or what the fuck ever, man. And that alone for a band that has been around for probably 20 years by the time that record comes out, like, who the fuck cares, man? They're still going to go out and sell out like 1500 cap venues. Like,
here's the beauty part, dude. The thing is that at this point in their career, they're writing the music that they want to make. They're writing records for them, and that fucking rocks.
Yeah, that's the goal.
You know what else? They were doing it back then too, motherfucker, and it was sick.
Yeah,
everybody got to jump on this bandwagon and enjoy basking in the fucking glow of this band. But you know what? They were just doing it for them too.
Just doing it. Yeah.
And dude, like, I'm sure there was a ton of label stuff and PR stuff. And blah, 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 choice, decision-making, all this crazy shit that I don't fucking know about. But what it sounds like to me is a bunch of people who actually give a fuck about what they're doing, getting in a room and making a fucking record that is sick.
Yeah.
And so that's what I care about, because it also carried over to Louder Now, which, like you said, bigger commercial success. We know it. It's fine. It's a great record. It somehow contends with where you want to be, even though it's not the same record. It's still on that same level. And you know what? The secret is because they gave a fuck
Yep. Okay?
And they just said, let's just not be corny. Can we just, can we do that, guys? Can we just make sure?
Yeah.
And every single band's challenge is that filter. Because you all have musical influences. You all grew up on certain bands. And guess what? Those bands probably did not suck. That's why you grew up on them. And yeah, dude, that's the only fucking rule. And they're playing by it better than any band maybe ever. Yep. So,
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a great point for Louder Now, because I mean, and like you said, I'm sure there was, especially for Louder Now being on Warner Brothers, I'm sure there was all kinds of random bullshit going on. I mean, you probably have Warner Brothers fucking peeping in the studio like, how's it going, guys? Like, they were probably like, we need a fucking radio single, and taking my sons like, what the fuck ever, dude? Like, sure. Like,
but think about that. But think about that, because the first single ended up being Make Damn Sure.
Yep.
And that song is also not fair.
Because oh my God.
It could have been on Where You Want to Be. It could have been, you know what I mean? And that is so fucking special, because again, I don't care how many producers had their hands in the mix here. That to me sounds like some dudes that know what they're doing and give a shit about what they're doing and made a song that is fucking smart and it's fucking great. And those lyrics are not what a normal pop producer at Warner Brothers would have going on and all that shit. You know what I mean? So I like it, dude, even if it is way more watered down than I'm imagining, I don't give a fuck, because it sounds real to me.
Because they made it sound real. Right. Even if they had three ghost fucking writers, I couldn't give a fuck less.
No, dude, it sounds a lot more authentic than 100,000% of the shit that you're listening to right now at this day and age.
Yep.
And that is not me being like a crusty 30 something year old dude talking shit. It's just me telling you that, dude, like, again, you don't have the choice to make music that sucks, because this already happened. This all the shit that you think is awesome, like, it already happened. So like, you should be at least on that fucking level by now. But dude, I mean, number two, like, they showed every single band how to do that shit from your heart and not be corny, you know?
Yeah, and they did.
Yeah, I know I keep making that point, but it really is the only thing that matters.
Yeah. It is. I agree. Yeah. I mean, they did it. And I know we've, you know, I think I said it earlier, but I know this record, you know, this legacy wise, if you look at this record, I think it just, you know, it's obviously that in between their debut of To All Your Friends, and then this record was big, and then Louder Now was fucking just astronomical. And I think those three records, and specifically Where You Want to Be, obviously, I would paint Where You Want to Be as the most important Take It Back Sunday record. And
dude, maybe the most important record, period.
Yeah, the like most ever. Important record ever. Fuck the Beatles, man. I don't even listen to the Beatles that much. But like, the most important record for them, because again, they had to bounce back from the guys leaving. And this was a big record for them to prove that, hey, all that momentum we just fucking got from touring our ass off for 2 years wasn't for nothing. And then, like you said, they debuted number fucking three. They kept touring, and then they signed to Warner Brothers, made Louder Now, and then the rest is fucking history. And I don't think that happens without them making this record, like you said.
No,
not fucking corny, man. They just
like you were talking about earlier, man. Like, the fact that you could have that kind of trajectory and continue to do well, with all the lineup changes, with all the craziness surrounding, like, the
fucking
sobriety. Like, yeah, dude, like,
fucking nuts, dude.
To do this shit in the face of all of that, I mean, dude, like, start a fucking band, go out and do this shit already. Because if they can fucking do it, you can fucking.
If they can survive,
yes, you know what I mean. And all you have to do is keep a level head on your shoulders and make sure it's coming from the right place. Because you use the word disingenuous earlier, and that's exactly what it is. It comes down to being that or not that.
Yeah.
As a music listener, your job is to say, is this cool or not? Right. So as a person who's running a podcast where you talk about records and stuff all day long,
like,
your perspective on this is just as important as the guys in the band writing the songs, you know, because even if that's coming from a real place for them and they're writing it for themselves, if that was the truth, if they were really writing it for themselves, right?
Yeah.
You would have never heard it.
Yeah.
But you did. and it made it special because guess what? I heard it too. And it did a crazy thing where it made me say, dude, I gotta write songs like this. I have to do this. And then I started a band, and then I met you through that fucking band, and blah, 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 blah. And now we're talking about this record that we both,
here we are, man.
Yeah. We're connected fucking love by it. This thing. And I'm sure there's a lot of other things in our history that would have connected us, but it's cool to zoom in on this one.
So yeah. Taking Back Sunday, shout out to Taking Back Sunday. I don't know that they're listeners, but if they do listen, we shout out to Taking Back Sunday. At this point, honestly, if you've made it to if they're listeners for some reason, if they're just chilling on their couch in fucking North Carolina, just hanging out, maybe Adam and John are on their fucking front yards, their neighbors, just chilling. Listen to this. Thanks, guys. Mike, what are your final thoughts on this, man? We can wrap this up. Do you have anything you want to say that you haven't said already?
Dude, my final thoughts on this are simply learn, dude. Listen to this record. Take it with you somewhere quiet, okay? Where you got nothing else going on and you're not going to be distracted by your phone or whatever. So if that means like you got to put it on your turntable or whatever, just do something for yourself where you're going to listen to this record front to back as a listener, as a musician, as an aspiring songwriter, whatever it is, and take notes. And I don't even know what those notes fucking are. I don't know what they're supposed to be, but that doesn't matter, because what I do know is that this record changed my mind about a lot of shit, and it has continued to change my mind about things like songwriting and how to shape a song to fit a mood and how to say it with the music and not solely rely on the melody, and think about things like performance and how your vocal takes can sound like a person going through something versus a person who actually knows how to sing and is professionally trained and blah, 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 and have the same effect. You don't have to worry so fucking much. When you listen to a band like Taking Back Sunday, when you hear this dude in the booth doing his thing, those are the takes they went with, bro.
Yeah.
Could have sang that better. Yes. He definitely could have hit that note or done it without his voice cracking or whatever. But you know what? They printed that one because it says something. Think about what that record is as a symbol. It's not just about the songs. It's not even really about whether you fucking like it or not. It's about what you are sitting here right now as a person who cares about punk rock at all.
Yeah.
And you have this band to thank for it. You know, so my final thoughts are simply, please listen to this record today. Please think about it when you're listening to it. Take some time with it. It's not that fucking long. It's like a half hour long.
Yeah.
Half hour out of your day to remember where you were when it happened. Or think about yourself as a musician now and what you're going to do about this fucking record, dude, because you still live up to this one.
Yeah.
So what are you doing? I don't give a shit. If it's not as sick as this record, why do I have to care? I don't.
Yeah.
I don't, and I won't. And no one should, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm going to leave you with.
I love it. I love it. I have no other final thoughts other than this record kicks ass, because it does. Front to back, I wouldn't skip a song on it. I wouldn't change a song. I guess I would potentially skip New American Classical. I'm not trying to like fucking listen to it. Like I'm trying to stay high energy. Like if I want to put this record on my record player tonight, like I'm not skipping that track either. No, but
because it's experience. So fucking like good. You have to have that come down, and then the feedback kicks in and you're in the next track and you want to kill all over again. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, that ends with gang vocals, man. It's fucking great. And it just ends with, it's a fucking great record. They everything aligned perfectly. I think we said that earlier, but everything just lined up so well for them. And they put everything into it. And by God, this fucking took off. And there's not a band or record that deserves it more. Totally and those agree. Are my thoughts.
And just, again, dude, thanks for the chance to come on here and just like rip about that record, because it's something that keeps me going to this day. And I listened to it a couple of times in prep for the conversation, but I'm gonna go back and listen to it now because I'm all psyched. So
that's right.
Thanks, dude.
That's right. Well, Mike, I appreciate it, and I appreciate you coming on.
Me too, man.
And we'll have to talk. We'll have to stay in touch, man. I know we keep talking a little bit more. That's good. It's been a long fucking time. So. And the music,
my rocks, pleasure, man.
Oh, sure, I think it kicks ass, man.
So cool to see you doing this, man. And I also wanted to say thank you for kind of having the same sort of conversation about a record that I made.
Yeah.
I listened to it. I thought it was crazy to hear some other people's take on what was going on with that record. So
yeah,
just thanks a lot for doing what you do, man. It's really cool to have people that document this space. It can't just all be bands, you know. So it's really, really cool that you're doing this, and thanks for taking the time to have a chat.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mike, I'll let you get out of here. I appreciate it. And everyone that listened to this whole thing, thank you guys as well. And we will have a different conversation about a different record next week.
Much love, guys. Thanks.